Today's show is brought to you by FreshBooks. For freelancers and small business owners, FreshBooks takes the pain out of accounting. Have a question about the service? A real live human will answer every call in about three rings. Get your 30-day free trial by going to freshbooks.com/openfloor and entering open floor.
I love Coach Hornacek. It's not even a question. I love him. It's not what got lost or what wasn't or what could have been. I love what he's done for us. For me, he was my coach in Utah. He brought me here. So when I was in high school, drawing out plays on my homework and then turning it in. When I was talking to Coach Wooden and he was giving me lessons to life. When Coach Brown was teaching me, holding me accountable, become a man and a leader. When Jerry West was giving me the vision of how basketball players should play. When I played along with Coach Sloan and he taught me the offense and taught me how to be a champion. It all was instilled into me in my journey. So I think it's just all coming together now.
Welcome to Open Floor, Sports Illustrated's NBA podcast. I'm your host, Lee Jenkins. I'm taking the seat over for the great Chris Mannix, now at Yahoo, and hoping to help build a true interview show where the league's players, coaches, and executives tell their stories. Today, we welcome UCLA legend and 13-year NBA veteran Earl Watson, who this week became the interim head coach of the Phoenix Suns. Watson is only 36, but in his basketball life, he's crossed paths with many of the game's immortals. John Wooden, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Jerry West, Hubie Brown, Jerry Sloan. He's a fantastic storyteller and an inspirational speaker. Thanks for joining us, Earl, and congratulations on the promotion.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, Earl, first time I interviewed you like this was more than 15 years ago. You were at UCLA. I mean, first day at UCLA, first pickup game, I don't know if it was Pauly or men's gym. You go in there and you ran into some other pretty good point guard in the gym, didn't you?
My first time playing in Pauly was with Magic Johnson. And it was like Magic Johnson, Kiki Vandeweghe. It was all the young NBA talent in LA. You had like Kobe, you had Shaq, you had Derek Fisher. It was a young Kevin Garnett. You had the young Chauncey Billups. You had Norm Nixon mixed in. So we had a lot of veterans, Lester Connor, and I was always playing on a veteran team with Magic. So when I played with Magic, Magic immediately coached me as if we were trying to win a championship, which I thought was the highest competition that someone could play. And, you know, he played pickup games the same way he played NBA finals games. And I learned a lot through basketball, playing pickup with Magic Johnson. Of course, Baron Davis was my roommate. We came in together. And Gilbert Arenas was a young kid at that time, just coming to the gym, trying to get into the pickup games. So you learn a lot about playing pickup at UCLA, and just the experience made me a better person.
Was that intimidating at all?
No, it wasn't intimidating. I chose UCLA because I wanted to immediately be put in the fire to see if I had what it takes to get to that next level, and also to see if I can grow as a person to be away from my family, and the education at UCLA prepared me for life.
I mean, so many guys on Sundays were like, you know, sleeping it off or going in and recovering from games, stuff like that. And you were hanging out at Coach Wooden's house, right? I mean, you were already kind of preparing for this.
I think when I went to UCLA, I wanted to see Coach Wooden's relationship. A lot of guys went into UCLA, they just admired him, talked to him as he come through the team. But for me, I wanted to actually take that opportunity and take it even further. I wanted to seek that relationship, learn from him as much as I could, and spend time with him. He's part of the reason why I chose UCLA. I chose UCLA for the experience, for the education, also to have an opportunity to learn from a champion. I believe everyone that attempts to accomplish a dream is a winner, is few champions in life, and I want to continue to build that until I become a part of that circle.
So how does that kind of thing start? Do you go up to him and say, Coach, I want to come out to your condo in Encino and hang out? Or I mean, what's the genesis of that kind of relationship?
I think one thing people didn't realize about Coach Wooden is when he would do autograph signings or wherever he was at in public, if you asked Coach Wooden for his number, he gave you his house number. It didn't matter who you were. So if you ask him for the number, he would give you the number. But the trick to calling Coach Wooden was you have to call him back again because it took him so long to get to the phone. So the answering machine would pick up. You leave a message to Coach. It's Earl. I'm calling you right back. You ring again. He picks up and with his, you know, compassionate, beautiful, angelistic type voice and just tell you, hello, how are you doing? And he just felt great. He always made you feel great when you were in his presence.
So then you drive out to Encino and just sit on the couch and hear him tell stories? Or how would that go? Because it was like basically a Sunday tradition for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, I try to do it every weekend. Coach Wooden was big on going to church. So it's either after church or the day before, which would be Saturday. And the thing about Coach Whitten is you go there, you come into the house, he has books in the condo all around the house. So he has bookshelves. You would think he lived in that library. So you understand immediately his wealth of knowledge came from reading. It came from extending his mind outside of basketball. So when you go there, you sit down. When you sit down with Coach Whitten, the first thing he asks you is, how are you doing? So you have a personal conversation. He searches your soul. He found a way to capture your heart. And then he starts to teach you about life. As he teaches you about life, he talks about love. He talks about creativity. Then he talks about the beautiful game of basketball as a gift. He always mixed it in with religion. He mixed it in with faith. He mixed it in with compassion and grace, attitude of gratitude, pursuing excellence. And at the same time, he would tell you, well, be quick, don't hurry. Just be the best you can be. So he was really unique in teaching you everything about life and the game, how to make people better around you. And then before you know it, you knew everything you wanted to know about the full court press and the UCLA hot post.
So Earl, at that point, you're 20 years old. You're a point guard at UCLA. You've got your whole NBA career ahead of you. Were you already starting to think someday I might be a coach?
No, I was not thinking someday I might be a coach. When I first started going to Coach Woodhouse, I was actually 18. I was just thinking that I wanted to be just like Coach. Like, how can I be the type of person that makes the world better, that makes my environment better, that will make people better? How can I give so much to other people that it influences them and it inspires them to become a better person? At the same time, making me better, because the greatest gift is not to receive, but to give away the gift. So Coach Whitten taught me everything about that. I just wanted to just write like him, talk like him, teach like him, create memories like him. And then the greatest gift of all, like he would tell me, is when your players come back and they become something more than just a basketball player.
You know, what is amazing about your whole journey is you keep crossing paths with pretty incredible people, you know, pretty celebrated figures in this game. When you're drafted by Seattle, and you go out there and you're automatically playing with Gary Payton, I'm sure sparring with him in practice. What was that experience like? I mean, was that scary at first?
No, because before I even got to Seattle, about my sophomore year, Coach Lau called me into the office. He's like, come to the office, someone would like to talk to you and meet you. So I go into the office. I don't know who it is. I'm going there. Who knows? Maybe a writer. It's Jerry West. Jerry immediately tells me how he loves my game. He admires the way I play. He thinks I'm great and teaching me automatically about basketball. That initiated a relationship with Jerry West that became a lifelong relationship. So by the time I got to Seattle my rookie year, I've been around Magic Johnson, Coach Whitten, Jerry West, all of the greats that come and play at UCLA. It was as if I belonged. I knew half the team just from playing pickup in the summertime.
What does that sound like, though? When you're practicing against Gary, when you're going against him, what kind of things is he saying? How much does that test somebody who's just a rookie in the NBA?
We know that things Gary Payton says cannot be recorded online. Gary Payton is the ultimate competitor. And when I first got there, it was obvious that he didn't want anything to do with me. I was a rookie. He really didn't care. He didn't want to acknowledge me. But I think my persistence, my effort, my intensity, and the fact that I never backed down from him, eventually he wanted to embrace me, mentor me, and he became my big brother and taught me a lot about the game.
I mean, this seems to be a trend with you, is there'll be, you know, you'll have tension at first, there'll be kind of a struggle at first, and then there's that breakthrough, because that's how it went in Memphis too. When Jerry West brought you to Memphis, at first with Hubie Brown, it wasn't easy with him either, was it?
It wasn't easy with Coach Brown. He was the first experienced coach with a wealth of knowledge that I've ever played for. So before, it was just a conversation with Coach Whitten. I never had Coach Whitten yell at me in practice, critique me in practice, hold me accountable in practice. So that relationship was safe. So when I got to Coach Brown, it was my fondest memory of Coach Brown was he cussed me out in the middle of the court in front of the entire team for about 25 minutes. maybe it was five. It felt like 25 minutes. I looked at Jerry West and was like, trade me. Jerry being Jerry, is like, come to the house for dinner. I'll see you tonight. Come to the house. The family wants to see you. I go to Jerry West's house. He tells me that Coach Brown not only will change my life and make me a better person, he's going to make me a better player, professional, and a man. I didn't want to hear it. He was like, just give him a chance before the end of the season. Coach Brown. I fell in love with him. He became the closest person in my life at that time. He still holds a special place in my life to this day. We still talk, and without him in my life, and this is why, this is how I fell in love with coaching. Without him in my life, I don't know where I would be today. Without him in my life, I'm a better person. I pursue excellence, and I want to become exactly what he taught me to be, a man of character.
What did you do to deserve that react, to get him yelling at you like that?
I didn't play the point guard position in the game. They didn't play me. They played Mike Miller at the point. Reporter asked me, how did I feel about it? It was a simple comment. I just said, hey, we have the best GM in the NBA. If I'm not winning, I'm sure he'll move me quick. That was all I said. That was all it took. And then before you know it, that's what I admire about Coach Brown. It was never private conversations. Whatever he says to you, he says in front of the team. That removes gossip. That removes he say, she say. That removes anything that's not transparent.
So when you say you don't know where you'd be if not for Coach Brown, what comes to mind? You think you would have been out of the league? Do you think
I would have been
coaching?
Out of the league. I wouldn't have played 13 years in the NBA. I definitely would not be a coach. To me, the greatest coaches in the world in life are teachers, especially in sport. I would not be a teacher of the game. I would still admire the game. I would coach the game, but I wouldn't teach the game. And the game has so many levels to it. It's so many stages to the game. It's not just the game, the sport. It's life. It's love. It's nurture. It's teach. It's accountability. It's being vulnerable. It's transparency. And it's trust. It's like a Krebs cycle. And without that, I would not be the person I am today.
Earl, how'd you react when Hubie retired?
Cried. Only NBA coach I ever played for that retired in the middle of the season where the whole team cried. Entire team cried on the plane. Thanksgiving night, I remember like it was yesterday. I wish I was born earlier in life to play for him my entire career, but I cried.
Were you taking notes at that time? Not physically, but mentally. Were you starting to think, okay, I'm playing for some great coaches here. I need to remember this stuff, or were you still not there yet?
The thing about it is the coaches that I came across, the people were so profound with their words, and the words were so potently laid, it became seeds into my mental, into my subconscious. So there was no way I ever had to take notes because it started to change who I am as a person. So when you have change in your life, you never forget it. When people speak words of wisdom and they speak growth and they speak change into your life, it's really hard to forget. So it became a part of me, which eventually is who I am today, and I'm still building and become a better person.
Who have you thought about this week? I mean, have you thought about Jerry Sloan? Have you thought more about Coach Brown? What kind of faces and stories are going through your head?
Coach Wooden, Nate McMillan, who was a rookie coach at that time when I was in Seattle, second year, I believe. Jerry West, Coach Brown. Larry Bird, when I was in Indiana, who told me I should be a coach. That's when I really took it seriously. Jerry Sloan, Phil Johnson, Kevin O'Connor. Ron Adams, who I absolutely just love as a coach. Dick Harter, who's passed away, who I admire because we would argue when he was assistant coach in Indiana about Oregon versus UCLA because he couldn't make the turn because coach wouldn't lose a game. Just coaches that come into life, you reflect on everyone. You take a piece from everyone. You make it who you are because it conformed to you. It changed you. Now it's a part of you, and you teach it. And the greatest gifts that you get, you have to give away.
Lav was your best man, wasn't he?
Yeah, Lav, for sure.
Steve Lav, your best man. What was that? I mean, not many players, I don't think, have their coach as their best man in their wedding. What was that speech like?
Coach Lav is great. Coach Lav taught me a lot about adversity, being resilient, being optimistic, and always finding the silver lining. And what I took out of that is in life, we have so many dreamers of an end. So you dream about how things should end and what could happen and what's going to happen and why it can't happen. And one thing about Coach Lav, he taught me how to be a visionary of means. So you visualize how to create. You visualize how to grow. And, you know, he was unique in my life as well.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more from Earl Watson. All over America, people are counting down to a huge event that demands everyone's attention. It's not the Super Bowl, it's not the election, it's taxes. For a better way to manage your books and make tax season easy, try FreshBooks, a cloud accounting software designed exclusively for service-based small business owners. It's the personal accountant you've always needed right in your pocket. FreshBooks is fast. You can create and send an invoice in 30 seconds. It's easy for customers to pay online, and FreshBooks clients get paid 5 days faster than average. Have a question about the service? FreshBooks answers every call in 5 rings or less. Have a question about the service? Just contact their award-winning support team and get help from real live humans. They answer every call in about 3 rings. No phone tree, no let me escalate that, no I'll get back to you, just helpful service at the drop of a hat. From landscapers to web designers, your time is better spent at quarterback than offensive line. FreshBooks does all the heavy lifting on invoicing, expenses, and taxes. Right now, FreshBooks is offering my listeners 30 days of unrestricted use, totally free, and you don't need a credit card to sign up. To get this 30-day free trial, just go to freshbooks.com/openfloor and enter open floor in the How You Heard About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/openfloor and enter promo code OPENFLOOR.
When I read that you were, you know, interviewing for this position, I think anybody who knows you was like, oh, that's a wrap. You know, he's obviously going to get that job. What did you say in there? What do you think? What do you think the kind of interplay was like with Ryan McDonough that let them know, let the Suns know that you were the guy to entrust with this team?
Well, I don't know. I'm just me. I don't try to become anyone that I'm not. I don't try to pretend to be anyone that I'm not. I'm just who I am. I'm the best that I can be with admiration in it and a focus to grow, to become better. I can't answer that question. Only they can answer that question.
Ty Lue text you this week or give you a call?
Yeah, I talked to Coach Lue this week, who we obviously grew up together in Kansas City since high school.
Was he a 76er?
Yeah, he played on the older team.
Huh. I mean, that might have been the best AAU team ever, right? It was you, the Rush brothers, Corleone Young. Do you feel that way, that it was kind of an iconic team to play on when you were growing up?
Corey Maggette, Mike Miller, Ryan Humphrey, Maurice Evans. We had players who couldn't get off the bench who played in the NBA for 10 years. So, yeah, it was an iconic team, and you go back to that team. That team in high school, and I started with that team in like the 6th, 7th grade. That team taught me how to deal with unique and exceptional personalities of basketball. That team taught me how to handle, how to manage personalities, people, and talent. And I think it impacted me up until this point.
So the lockout comes 2011, and that's what you did. I mean, you went and you were coaching, right? Was that your first experience coaching? Was the 76ers?
You did a unique background check. Yeah, I coached. I started a travel team. I started coaching travel teams. When the lockout actually came, I went to St. John's, and it was a rule that the coaches couldn't coach the team at St. John's, but Lav let me play pickup with the team. And throughout playing pickup, I was unique in just being there and helping be around college players, working out college players, and it allowed me to get a step into the door and take a feel on what it would be like to coach.
But the fact that you did it with the 76ers, with the team that you felt kind of was a saving grace for you, how much of that was because you wanted to be a coach, and how much of that was that you just wanted to help your community?
Actually, it's only because my little brother passed away that instilled a desire for me to give back to the youth. I think it's the way I still connect with him. He passed away when he was 17. I was 24. And that's when I really started my travel teams. Right now, we have about 30 travel teams out of Los Angeles called Earl Watson Elite, Southern Cal, some impact in other communities. We have travel teams out of the country, also in Hawaii. We have travel teams in Australia. We have travel teams all over. We're just building a way of basketball and a trend to where it's unique. And I'm just giving away my gift. And if it wasn't for travel teams, I wouldn't be in college or in the NBA. So I see the positive light in that area.
Yeah, I mean, your little brother was Eric Vargas. Your family adopted him, correct?
Yeah.
And you had 3 older brothers. When he passed away, because that was when you were in Memphis also, and it sounds like it was that time you were just talking about where, you know, things could have gone either way as far as your NBA career. How did it affect you? How were you able to kind of push through that?
I'm at four older brothers, actually. And when he passed away, it was a hit and run, unsolved, hit and run murder, I guess you can say, and not solved until this day. We don't know who actually ran him off the road. They kept going. So I think that moment is when you come to a self-check, and it's a choice. You can choose to live bitter and be negative for the rest of your life, or you can choose to still love and understand that love is very fragile and it's not a forever thing in person on earth, but it's a spiritual thing and it lasts forever. And you love stronger and you take moments, you know, you don't take them for granted. You really hold on to moments and you cherish them and you let them go and move on to the next one, but you never just take the negative route.
Did it feel like when you were coaching the 76ers, when you're with your little guys, your AU guys in LA, do those feel like little brothers in some way? I mean, is it kind of replacing a little of that void?
It is. And I also see a lot of myself in them. And I feel like if I can change them and save them, not even change them, just help them grow and see a different side of the world, of life, and instill and keep their beliefs and their dreams available and potent in their mind and in their heart, I think something good would come out of it. Up until this day, we put over 100 kids into college. We was a part of that relationship with their families, not just us, the parents too. It's a process. It's a village that raised the youth.
So Larry Bird tells you he thinks you should be a coach. And then you go and you spend 2011 with that lockout period at St. John's with the 76ers. Did you know after that, yeah, Larry Bird was right? Or were you still kind of trying it out, still thinking about it?
Let me tell you something. This is a unique gift of people. Larry Bird is very quiet, subtle, but when he speaks, it's with a purpose. So when Larry Bird and David Morway brought me into their office in the exit meeting, they asked me, did I want to retire at that point and come into the organization as a coach? I told them I didn't. I wanted to continue to play so they have more years to play. But if Larry Bird could have told me, if he would have told me, I could have been a pilot, I would have believed him. And I'd be flying planes and be the greatest pilot I could be. So Larry Bird, when he says something, it's like giving me his belief. And that's the gift of passing it forward and passing it on.
So you kind of became almost like an assistant in uniform. Like when I saw you in Portland, it seemed like you were almost a coach to Damian Lillard as much as you were his backup, which is something it seemed like you were taking a lot of pride in.
Yeah, I think Neil O'Shea, who I've met at UCLA, used to work, used to be our guy to work us out. He was unique, and he had a lot to do with my career becoming a better player. He eventually becomes the GM. He brought me in to be a player coach. Terry Stotts and their staff embraced me to be a player coach, and they allowed me to have the floor in certain situations to teach. Eventually, they taught me how to like run practice, brought me to a couple of coaches' meetings before games or practice, and they knew that I was going to become a coach, and they kind of embraced it and cheered it on. So without them in my life, I wouldn't be to where I am now, I don't think, because they kind of instilled it and gave me belief that it is possible.
Did you get to run a practice with them? Were you really that involved where you were kind of in the midst of huddles and things like that?
I was in huddles, some shoot arounds against Utah. He let me talk about their offense and teach it because I played for Utah with Jerry Sloan. It was the same autos. He picked his spots. He let me talk. He gave me a voice, but I also knew my role and I respected him as the head coach.
One of your assistants in Phoenix is going to be Bob Hill, who was your head coach in Seattle when this whole thing started. I mean, does this ever trip you out just how much this is kind of coming full circle for you?
No, because when I met Coach Hill and why I love Coach Hill and why I needed him by my side is because he doesn't agree with me. We have debates. He's going to bring me a different look at the game. He's going to challenge me. I'm going to challenge him. We eventually come to an agreement, but he's not going to be okay with everything that I do and vice versa. And I think if you put together a group around you who are creative and innovators of their own, it's impossible for us to paint the same picture, but we can paint on the same canvas and create a beautiful picture, but we have to have different brushes. And that's mainly, and that's important. And that's why he's here.
Cause even when you were a rookie, right? I think you guys were even living in the same building. You'd get into a little bit with him, wouldn't you?
It was my fifth year. In the league, and we lived in the same building, and it was a love-hate relationship, but it was a relationship that made us both better. and we respect each other. We love each other. We challenge each other. And I have four older brothers, and I never got along with them every day, but I still love them.
I mean, I ask all that in part to bring up Markieff, because I know he's gone through a lot. I know there's been a lot of things said back and forth, both sides. But you've had sort of some of these, you've seen it from both sides. You've had some of these relationships that have kind of gone off the rails, and then you've learned that you could kind of get it back on through sort of ease of personality or whatever it may be. Does all your experiences make you feel like it is salvageable with Markieff?
Listen, everyone's talking about Markieff, and with people, they're like 3 months late on Markieff. And you can never connect the dots going backwards. You can only connect them moving forward. Markieff is a young man who is unique in a great way. He's talented, he's skilled, but beyond that, I think he's a loyal person. And that's what matters mostly to me. I believe in Markieff. I trust in him. I have love for him. I love him as a person that I've grown to know. And I don't care what he did in the past. It doesn't matter to me. Only thing that matters is that he's learned from it. He moves forward. We embrace him. We love him and nurture him along his journey to become a better player, a better person, a better leader. And if he gets to that destination, that past is not a negative. It's a springboard that moves him up instead of holding him down. So that's how we perceive Markieff moving forward.
What do you love about him?
His loyalty, tenacity, creativity. The fact that he's a great communicator, high basketball IQ, and a very intelligent person off the court. I love the fact that no matter what, he comes here, he cheers, he smiles. He has incidents. That's okay. We get past that. We all have to grow. Just like I had to grow in front of Coach Brown, it's an opportunity for Markieff to grow today. And you can't judge anyone in their early 20s, the mid-20s, where we all would be held accountable for the past of crazy things that we've done in life.
What did you tell him when you got the job?
I wish I could tell you. I can't give away all my secrets.
All right. Well, what did you tell the team? Say what you told the team in general, because obviously this season, you know, has not been the way anybody would have imagined. How'd you feel like you can kind of get it back to where it could still be a positive experience here in the next few months?
The greatest thing in life are the hardest things to get. And if your obstacle is tough along your journey, that means there's something great waiting for you on the other side. So if some things we're battling right now, that's not even basketball. Everyone focused on the game, but the game is just a small piece of how it's supposed to be played. So one thing we have to do is develop a trust within each other. We have to develop a selflessness within each other, within our family, build the family. And at the same time, understand that well, all of that, we're going to be hit where our faith is going to be very critical and crucial. But it's a choice. Either we believe we can or we're going to believe we cannot. We have to be visionaries of means. Never dream of the ending. Never dream of losing. Never dream of not coming back. Only look forward and think, how can we get into this game? How do we close this game? How do we win this game? You can't focus two directions and walk straight. So let's focus one direction. Let's walk that direction until it happens. And continue to stay consistent in your path, and it's going to end up happening.
How did all that get lost? Because through this season, clearly there was a loss of faith, and you were watching, you were observing. What did you see happen besides the injuries?
I say this, and I'm consistent with this, and I truly believe this. It's truly how I believe. I love Coach Hornacek. It's not even a question. I love him. It's not what got lost or what wasn't or what could have been. I love what he's done for us. For me, he was my coach in Utah. He brought me here. He gave me the opportunity to even be here. I love him. I have admiration for him, and I think he's a great coach. I'm glad that he built something he can leave me that I can build on top of and continue pursuing his vision, his dream. It's not my decision to say I don't have a platform to say what wasn't and what could have been. So we appreciate him. We love him. And he's still a part of my life moving forward.
You weren't even a full-fledged assistant when this season began. When you get the job, when Ryan says you're our guy going forward the rest of this season, what do? Do you call people? Do you read stuff? Do you think about anything? What's this week been like for you?
Failing to prepare is preparing to fail. And one thing Coach Wooden taught me about life is that opportunity never comes when you expect it. So you have to be prepared. You have to visualize your life. You know, Einstein was big on visualizing the ending, and then he worked his way backwards. He called it time travel. So like when you come into life and you have a dream and a goal, and just like you, I'm sure you visualize where you are now a long time ago in life. You had an ending, a destination. Alone, that destination is a journey. That journey can take you any direction, but as long as you get to that destination, it's all that matters. So it wasn't as if when I got the job, I started thinking about what do I do to become a coach. I was thinking about becoming a coach earlier in life and didn't even realize it. When I was in high school, drawing out plays on my homework and then turning it in. Hmm. When I was talking to Coach Wooden and he was giving me lessons to life. When Coach Brown was teaching me, holding me accountable, become a man and a leader. When Jerry West was giving me the vision of how basketball players should play. When I played along with Coach Sloan and he taught me the offense and taught me how to be a champion. It all was instilled into me in my journey. So I think it just all is coming together now.
But all those times, most of those times, you were visualizing yourself running a team as a point guard. When did it become that you were visualizing yourself in a fancy suit on the sideline?
First off, I hate suits, so I never visualize myself in suits. The second thing is the greatest point guards in the game or the most impactful point guards in the game are coaches, as they say, on the floor. So it's really no different. The only thing that I can't do is actually dribble up the ball and call the play. There's no different. So the key is communication. Can you communicate your vision, your thoughts, your personality? Can you communicate the visualization of the entire game and break it down in just segments and pieces and flashes? So communication is key.
Found anywhere in Phoenix that makes as good enchiladas as your mom?
Nowhere in Phoenix does. You know I'm biased to that.
Earl, I appreciate you doing this. Congratulations on everything.
Oh, man, good to hear from you. Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Many thanks to Earl Watson on the busiest week imaginable for taking the time for this conversation. If you have any feedback or suggestions, make sure to get in touch with the show. You can find me on Twitter at @SI_LeeJenkins or my producer, Alan Kim, @AlanXKim, and use the hashtag OpenFloor. Make sure to subscribe to the Open Floor podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, and leave a review if you like what you hear. You can also find more great Sports Illustrated podcasts at si.com/podcasts. Thanks for tuning in, and check back next week for a new episode of Open Floor.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.